Good morning. Please be seated. The third case on the Southern Panel's argument this morning is Juana Fanders versus Riverside Resort and Casino, Inc. et al., case number 51225. All right. Mr. Mills, are you prepared to proceed?
I am. John, I've asked the clerk if she could notify me in 5 minutes.
There'll be an annoying bell that goes off that will alert
light.
You accordingly.
I think I need it.
Or merciful.
Or
Justice, Madam Clerk of the Court, may please the Court. My name is Gregor Mills. I represent the appellant. Your Honor, this case is a civil case where the appellant sued her former employer and co-employees for injuries that resulted out of an incident that occurred at the hotel. The defendants filed a motion for summary judgment saying that the cause of action were barred because of workman's comp, the Nevada Industrial Insurance Act, NRS 616. We filed an opposition. The appellant filed an opposition. The court heard it on the merits and ruled in favor of the defendants, ruling that all the allegations that are listed in the complaint are barred because of 616. We appealed that decision. That's why we're here. Your Honor, because of some of the discrepancy in the facts in the opening brief and the answering brief, there are just four facts that I want to make sure that the court understands. Those are all facts that are supported and cited in the record. One, she was an at-will employee. Two, she quit. She then was voluntary. She was voluntarily leaving the property. And four, the former employer stopped her, used force to take her down and confine her. Your Honor, when considering whether or not an incident falls under 616, the court has to examine whether or not the accident arose out of the course of employment. So there's three things in essence. One is it an accident? Did it arise out of the course of employment? Starting with an accident, 616A030 defines an accident meaning an unexpected, unforeseen event happening suddenly, violently, with or without human fault and producing at the time objective symptoms of injury. Now this is important because throughout 616, accident is used. It's even in parentheses. Our complaint on its face alleged intentional force, assault, battery, false imprisonment, and then of course punitive damages. This was not an accident. The co-employees, former co-employees, and I'll break them up, I'll go to the employer, former full employees, they consciously chose to strike, pull hair, kick, grab, pull her, confine her to a cell. That was a voluntary act. With regards to the employer, former employer, when I say employer, I mean the director of human resources, who only answers to the executive. She instructed security at 86er, knowing that the reasonable force was going to be used to take her against her will down to the basement. And so in either instant, this was not an accident. This was an intentional tort. Now the Supreme Court has ruled that intentional tort of an employer is not covered under 616. We're dealing with accidents, and therefore they can sue. The next item is, did it arise out of? Now, as justices are aware, the Supreme Court came down on ruling September 30th in the Rio case, Hotel and All Suites, and came up with a new test. And in that case, they said when looking at an incident and whether or not it arises out of, there are three types of risk. There are the solely employment related. Those are accidents that occur that come to mind naturally, like a cook is cooking and he burns himself. A waitress is walking and slips on wet tile. These are accidents that you would expect that are part of the risk of employment. Those are solely employment related. Those are. Then they said there are purely personal accidents or risk. Those are accidents that occur based upon the defect or the nature or condition of the individual. I'm walking upstairs, I have MS, I fall. Well, that's not covered under 616.
Counsel, in this particular case, since she voluntarily resigned, I'll use that term, at a point. Is she still deemed an employee until she exits the property?
Your Honor,
or in this case, because they attempted to intervene and 86 her? When do we start and when do we stop her employment or being covered under workman's comp? Because do we view this until she physically leaves the property, she would be covered under workman's comp?
Your Honor, jumping to the last element, which is the employment, when you're dealing with that, that's a great question. Where does the employment end? Where does the coverage end? She clearly was not, she said, I quit, signed the paper. Taking the liberal approach, the court has sided in past decisions where they're using the but-for test and a different test. They said that the coverage extends the to and go. And in explaining that, the court said, if the employee is doing his or her normal routine activities, getting their tools, walking to their car, the normal activities. For example, if she would have left after quitting, and as she's walking out, would have slipped or ran into somebody, as she's walking out, normal way that she goes, she's covered. Now, if she is leaving, would have said, you know what, I've never seen the top of this building. I would have gotten the elevator and rode to the top, and an injury occurs while she's up there messing around on the top of the building, that wouldn't have been covered. Because that's not a routine, normal thing of exiting the building, the going and coming from the job. That was covered. And so let's apply the facts to this case. She's leaving, and as she's leaving, the employer says, nope, sends security, grabs her against her will, and takes her downstairs. Now the employer's going to say, hey, this is the normal routine. This is the normal routine. That would sometimes be 86 employees. But the fact is, the numbers don't support it. In the deposition, and part
well,
of
I guess that's one of the questions, Mr. Mills, for counsel to talk about today. Is there really assuming for the moment that the 86, so-called 86 policy would be applicable in a circumstance in which an employee has resigned and is departing the premises? And the 86 policy is a recognized policy of the employer in dealing with either patrons or employees who are being 86'd, whatever that encompasses. Is there a factual question then involved, resolved by the trial court, as to the extent, use, and application of the 86 policy in the context of this situation in deciding whether the terminated employee and the coverage, workman's compensation coverage for the terminated employee applies when they're leaving the premises under an 86 policy?
Absolutely. If there was a handbook or if it was given knowledge that upon your termination, the casino could 86 you and interview you, force you to have your picture taken, answer questions, and lock you up, or just if that was in some form of notice, the reality is it's not. Not in a handbook, and the numbers, although the defendants would like to claim it happens quite often, 6 or 7 times a year, they fire 25 people a week. That's 1,300 individuals terminated in that hotel. If you take the big number, 7, divide the 13 into 7, that's less than 0.5% of employees that are terminated are 86.
Well, I'm not sure that this, again, gets back to the factual question. I'll ask Mr. Young to comment on that, too. I'm not sure that the question is driven purely by numbers. It seems to me that it's driven in part by circumstances. If Ms. Sanders utters expressions of other behavior that causes the employer to believe that she has to be removed under an 86 policy, a known and used policy of the employer, then maybe her behavior satisfies the steps necessary to invoke it rather than just pure numbers of employees.
I agree if it is a known procedure that the employee knows about, that is part of her employment, that's part of her wage, that is part of the increased risk that the general public doesn't have. Applying your question back to the increased risk, 86 is used for customers. That's what it's used for. When they 86'd her, it's not because she's a formal employee acting bad. It's because there's an individual, like a customer, that is being disruptive, or they believe, and they want to 86 them from the hotel.
Well, does this record show that the 86 policy has never been applied to employees before?
Former employees, that's where the numbers come in. It happens 6 to 7 times a year out of 1,300 employees that are fired within the given year. It's not in any policy. The employee doesn't know about it. It's not something that's...
Okay, but it has been implied to prior to other former employees or other employees who've been...
Yes, that once they're fired, it could have been, we don't know the facts, it could have been they re-entered the scene or made a scene. I don't know what the facts, that 6 or 7, but at the point they're fired and they start to behave badly, they're like the general public. And there isn't an increase in risk from being an employee or the general public in that you're being 86 because you're being disruptive, just like anybody out there.
Okay, Mr. Mills, is there any other point you wish to make? You've heard the annoying bell.
Okay, Your Honor, real quick, with dealing with the co-employees, I believe, or the case law supports that 616 deals clearly with employers, not co-employees or former co-employees. And those were intentional torts. If you apply the case law of the pub case where the bartender smashed the arm and that was held to be outside 616 because it was intentional, if that applies to owners, obviously it should apply to co-employees who aren't even protected under 616. And so I reserve whatever remaining time I have for any other questions.
All right, Mr. Mills, thank you. Mr. Young, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Richard Young. I'm here on behalf of Riverside and the 6 named employees, all of whom were dismissed on the granting of summary judgment in this case. We're here for the de novo review of that decision by the lower court. I believe that the facts are not in dispute that are relevant to this issue. The employee who had initial training, discussion of workers' compensation issues when hired, on September 16th, 2003, an incident occurred in the employee lunchroom. The other employee complained and they were brought down to human resources to discuss the issue. In the middle of this meeting, Ms. Fander stands up and says, "I know what you're trying to do. I quit." Now, counsel would have it be that's the end of her employment. It's my position that that starts the termination process. She announces she's ready, and there are things that had to be done. Because of why she was called down, the particular facts of this meeting, and her walking out of the meeting and refusing to discuss the issues, the head of human resources and the head of housekeeping asked that she be 86th. They didn't want her going back up on the floor, which was very easy to do in this casino, and disrupt people that were working. So the issues involved in this particular incident are employment-related issues. They're not personal issues. Nothing was imported into the work to bring this issue forward. And under NRS 16020, the rights under the workers' compensation statute are exclusive in all other common law claims. So that would include...
How do we deal with the intentional tort issue that's being alleged?
Counsel would have intentional torts excluded. But in the Cummings versus United Resorts case, that was an employee who went into the employee locker room and murdered a co-employee. And so that was an intentional tort, what I'm saying.
Well, counsel, we're talking about, we have an employee who says, I'm leaving. The hotel says, well, we'll agree you're no longer employed here. However, before you leave, we want to photograph you and whatnot. The employee does not comply with the request, but then the security guard takes it upon themselves to physically attempt to get compliance.
Yes.
Isn't the act of the security guard to compel compliance an intentional act at this point?
Of that employee at that time. Okay. The bringing her down to the security, there was no force. She walked with them. She walked down there. It was once they got in there and she didn't want her picture taken. That's when the incident occurred. But what I'm saying is that in this case, all of the factors that brought her there were related to her employment. That the whole incident arose from the employment. It was in the course of employment. It was within her normal hours. It was all over before that shift would have ended. And I'm saying, Your Honor, that she was an employee, that for this incident, for an employee that is disrupting the business procedures on that day, so that they do 86.
The record doesn't seem to show, at least what I've read, disruption. But it does show that we have an incident sometime during this termination proceeding where the hotel uses some type of force to attempt compliance. Now, is she an employee at that point, or is she not an employee at that point? Or does it even matter based upon the activity that's going on?
I believe it matters because it is related to the termination process. Large sum workers' compensation law says the I quit is not the end all of the employment, that there was reasonable time after to process the termination. And in this case, because of the disruption, and that is in the deposition of Ms. Moma, the head of human resources, where she discusses why they brought her in to talk to her and how she left the room.
Mr. Young, does the 86 policy contemplate mere escort of a disruptive employee from the premises? In this instance, the employee is detained. That seems to me to abridge the policy itself.
Well, the process developed was to establish so they could show that, in fact, this person was made aware they shouldn't come back, so that should they come back, they could be prosecuted for trespassing. That's why the whole procedure was developed, and many casinos, hotels, do use that procedure. And I think in this case, for this particular incident, while they say there's 1,300 people a year fired, that's the whole employment staff of the property. So I think what we're talking about, there are a lot of employees that quit or get fired, and there's no 86.
So would Cummings cover this hypothetical? Ms. Fanders is escorted into the detention area of the casino security. They request to take her photo. She refuses. She becomes disruptive, and the security guard shoots and kills her. You would argue then that workman's comp prevents the intentional claim.
I would argue that as the hotel, that from the hotel standpoint and Ms. Fanders' standpoint, there was no intention that anything was going to happen. There was no substantial certainty that taking her down to the security office is going to result in substantial body of harm or death. So it would include a death, just like Cummings, that did result in a workers' compensation claim. What I'm saying here is...
How about the guard who shoots her? Is that covered by workers' comp?
Then you get into the issue of the extent of his involvement with the hotel. And under Larson, when we're talking about a person who is a mere supervisor, the workers' comp would still apply. I haven't seen a case in Nevada where we're talking directly from just the employee. In the Phase Pub case that they rely on, that person was not only the major stockholder, but he was the manager that night, and he was personally involved in the incident.
What concerns me here is that the issue comes to us by way of summary judgment. And there are allegations in the complaint, as I understand it, that the security personnel pulled her by the hair, didn't shoot her, but they committed other acts that would seem, at least to on the surface, to go well beyond what's necessary to escort her out of the premises.
Yes, and
are those factual allegations enough to require more by the district court judge in deciding summary judgment, at least as against the co-employees?
Well, my concern of that issue, of course, is I'm not aware in the Wood versus Safeway case that there was any allegation against the individual employee that wasn't dealt with in that case. But in this case, the individual allegations of the specific things that happened, they're on video. Some of them you cannot see. You can't see the hair pulling. But on the whole, from the standpoint that the statute says all common law remedies are eliminated. And to balance as a matter of law the difference between the no-fault liability under workers' comp justifying the exclusive remedy versus the tort remedy where you could sue the individuals, it says all of those are eliminated when it's determined to be in workers' compensation. And that's why I thought that in this case it was appropriate, not only as to the hotel, but also as to the individual employee.
But doesn't it become factual as to whether or not what occurred was work-related?
I think from a standpoint of the issue of law is, were the events, in other words, if one of these employees had a personal grudge against her, or there's some way they were doing something personal as to her, other than just doing their job, then yes. But in this case, no one knew each other. None of these employees, all the discoveries...
Well, that gets back to my original question. Did the 86 policy contemplate in the escorting of a disgruntled employee from the premises their detention? Because all of these events, at least as I understand the allegations, occurred while she was detained. I'm a little bit surprised that a policy, an 86 policy, which is intended to preserve peace and get the disruptive individual off the premises, would contemplate their detention in the process. Is that what the policy contemplates or says?
No, the policy does not contemplate other than taking him to the security office, getting him out of wherever incident was on the floor of the casino specifically, to get them out of that environment, take their picture, read them a little piece of paper that says, you now know that you can be charged with trespass if you come back, and then take them off the property. It happens quite often in that situation, and there is no incident. Unfortunately, in this case, it went the other direction.
Well, but the detention is incidental to having to have the employee or the patron submit to being photographed and listened to, presumably on videotape, the instruction that you're no longer welcome here, don't come back. Correct?
That's correct.
So if they resist that that ceremony, if you will, then detention is what's employed as part of the 86 policy. Is that correct?
In this particular instance, that is true. That is what I
have. So we could cuff you and tie you down, and you've actually really understood the video. Anything further, Mr. Young?
Well, I think I'd like to just address for a moment
sure. The
real case.
Yes.
Of the incident of the personal versus employment risk and the neutral risk. In my brief, I had contemplated that it was all related to employment, and therefore I thought that was the primary point. In the real case, and this is addressing the neutral issue, certainly 86 applied both to the general public and to the individual. The testimony is that there are 6 or 7 year employees that result in the 86 procedure as part of the termination process. And in that process, all of them, it's all work-related risks that are involved, and therefore I think that it still applies, as in my original argument, that Rio supports our position.
Factually, had this employee's termination been entirely processed, she had turned in her employee work card, she'd signed the paperwork. Had all of that occurred before the 86 occurred?
No documents signing out, quitting, were ever signed, were ever produced, or ever seen by counsel in this case.
Was the 86 process a combined termination, exit interview, 86, or was it completely separate and something that would have occurred if a patron had done exactly the same thing? Do you follow what I'm asking?
The 86 procedure involved would have been the same procedure for the general public. They would have been asked to come down. If they refused to come down there, then that would have been a different issue. How do they establish that a person was known? Can they direct the camera to catch this person if there's one in the area that can move to catch that general patron before they're out so they have some proof that they're being evicted?
So there's nothing in this record to suggest that the 86 session for this person was any different than it would have been for a regular patron as opposed to former employee?
That's correct. If the person came down there, it would have been the same procedure. Photo, read it, and leave. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Young, thank you. Mr.
Can I respond?
Yeah, Mr. Mills, you have some time left.
I do. Dealing on page 119 of the appendix, it states when asking the plaintiff, the appellant, what she did, and in that on page 22 of that depo, she says that, well, I went to human resources, I quit, then I was sent up to the housekeeping because that's where she worked. She signed her papers, and then she left. Now, the director of human resources in her deposition said, one question, did Ms. Fanders know she was being 86? No. So this isn't part of a policy. I hate the word policy, and this is all factual that needs to be set out in a trial, but when Cancel was describing when somebody gets disruptive on the casino floor, he's talking to the general public. That's what 86 is for. And when you apply it to this court's increased risk test, it's clear that it's not arising out of the course of employment. Because there's not a greater risk of being an employee and being 86 than a guy that walks through that front door. What are the elements? Why do you get 86, according to Cancel? You're disruptive and you're in the casino. Well, how does being an employee, or in this case, change that from the general public? He's saying that 6 or 7 our employees are 86 a year. What is the number of patrons that are 86? 2 a night, 3 a night? And they knew when they said 86er and didn't tell her, and she was leaving, she had signed out, and there's not a policy, she doesn't
know. Well, Mr. Mills, you focus on the numbers, but isn't the 86 policy directed to circumstances? And I can see a circumstance where an employee is disruptive. They brought a gun to work. I think somebody would want to say we ought to 86 that person.
I agree, but that's not different from the general public. Is there an increase in risk from the employment? If I go to work as a working house cleaning, there's an increased risk that I'm going to burn my hands or my hand get caught in a dryer or dealing with house cleaning. Is there an increased risk that I'm going to be 86? No, because it's not in the policy. I don't even know about it. If I do get 86, it's because after I'm fired, I'm like anybody else, I'm being disruptive, and I'm going to be 86. The case where the individual brought the gun, the employee shot the other employee, that's under the old test of this court, where it was almost a but-for. It wouldn't have happened but for you being on the job position test. And this court used the Rio to kind of pull it back because 616 in the statute says that this is supposed to be neutrally applied to the employers. And so in the Rio case, it specifically says in there that we're bringing this back. We're not doing the liberal approach of the position or the but-for test. And that's what was applied in that case where an employee shot another employee. Basically, hey, it wouldn't have happened if she wouldn't have been on the job. And then if you apply it here to get real liberal and say, well, would she have been there if she wouldn't have been a housekeeper? Well, I guess so, and therefore it's work-related. But that's not the standard. And that's not the standard because 616 is designed to cover those accidents that occur that are reasonably thought of in the scope of that employment. And if not, then is it an increase in the risk? Does that employee face an increase in risk of that accident occurring over just a general person walking in?
So you'd concede that if the security officers in this case had escorted Ms. Fanders outside the premises and in the process of doing so, she tripped and fell and was injured, she'd be covered by workers' comp?
I think the moment they use force on her to restrain her, then that's the tort. But if she was walking out on her own, no one pushing her, she's walking out like she does in her normal scope of employment, and she trips under the old test, that could apply. Under the liberal test, I was using the liberal test, that would apply because she's walking out of her normal scope. Now, if she tripped on a defect, then under the approach, that still applies. She's under that coverage. Like if the stairs were messed up or there was a spill, she's still, that's her normal routine. But the moment you step out of there, goes up to the roof to take a view, or the employer says, I'm going to beat the tar out of you, bruise his head to toe, and lock you up, then that's outside that scope. That's not her natural routine.
Mr. Mills, before you sit down, just trying to, for clarity's sake, and you went to the appendix, page 119, you and counsel for the Riverside seem to both agree that an incident occurred. At some point, she was escorted to personnel or something, and she says she quit or something to that. You indicated from there she went to housekeeping to sign whatever final. And then this event occurred after that. Was there anything else that either the hotel had to do or she had to do to in the relationship besides giving her her final paycheck?
No. Nope. And she knew she wouldn't get her final paycheck until payday. That's in the handbook. No, she was done. She was volunteering.
So she had left. That's what I said. She had gone to the house. She had left the confrontation with personnel as to what was going on. And she went up to the housekeeping to sign out and, I guess, give back her badge or whatever she had to do. And then as far as she was concerned, her relationship, her work relationship had ended and she was leaving?
That's exactly right. And the director of human resources, the employer, knew she didn't know she was being 86. Because she's the one, you know, said, hey, can you have her come here? And came in and she quit to her and then goes and does what she has to do to leave the building and formally quit. That was done. She's leaving as an individual, former employee, leaving the building, and because of their afraid that she could go somewhere, not as an employee, but as a general person, go and disrupt other departments or go to the casino, they wanted to age six her as a cooling down. That is the exact same as an individual.
So did she, was security summoned to either the housekeeping area to escort her off or to the personnel to escort her off, or they somewhere in between intercepted her?
That's exactly what happened. After she went into the management and said, I quit, and she then went, like I said, and then as she's leaving, that's when the director said, you know what, why don't we have her 86? She needs to cool down. Let's have her 86.
But the episode that led to the decision to 86 her occurred prior to her processing the termination paperwork and so forth, correct? Whatever it was, whatever dispute arose, that arose while she was still an employee in the process of quitting.
Well, she said, I quit, and that's what got him. And then leaves, and then the director is communicating with someone else. Meanwhile, she's doing it. So I don't know exactly what happened, but to answer your question, yes, the 86 was based upon actions that were occurring after she said, I quit, before she said, I quit, that whole area. And then as she's quitting, the reason why they 86 her is they didn't want her going up and disrupting other areas.
And the reason they thought she would be disruptive was based on conduct that occurred in the process of her saying, I quit, I'm out of here.
And after, yes.
So before and after and during, is that right?
You know, the record, it's based upon the quitting process, some of the statements made after quitting, and then just flat out, they decided that they wanted the 86er to cool it down. So that was the explanation given. So I assume it's during that whole process that's happening. Yes, Sean.
Anything further? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mills, Mr. Young, for your advocacy and your briefs in this matter. The matter will stand submitted.